Radiolab is supported by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, exercising, cleaning. What if you could also be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average, and auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com, Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Listener supported, WNYC Studios.
Hey, I'm Chad Abumrad.
And I'm Robert Krulwich, and we are talking on Radiolab about things stochastic.
Like coin flips and lottery tickets.
But let's just push this whole argument another step forward, if we may.
Which mean?
Let's talk about human beings. Would it surprise you, Chad, if I told you that on the subject of predictability, humans and coins are kind of similar?
It wouldn't surprise me because I wouldn't believe it.
You would believe it if I made you an argument so powerful, so astonishing, that you would be falling back on your butt in surprise and staring at me with a kind of simple admiration that you rarely have. Because here it is. It is. I'm going to talk to you about basketball.
Basketball?
That is a sport where people—
First of all, A, what do you know about basketball?
I know.
B, basketball is a game of skill. Don't even try and pretend that there is like random forces like coin flip.
Let me make you an argument. Let's just take, to make it really interesting, the most skilled basketball team ever.
For example, you could take a look at the 82-83 76ers.
The Philadelphia 76ers, Maurice Cheeks, quiet, no pick.
That's Jonah Lehrer, regular on our show.
It's one of the best NBA teams of all time.
Along to Cheeks. Cheeks to Dr. Jakes, swooping underneath, putting it up and in.
So during the playoffs, the 76ers were all incredibly hot.
Take my man Andrew Toney. During this run, he was...
Sometimes Andrew Tooney would make 5 shots in a row. He would be considered hot.
So that's the deal. Andrew hits his mark once, hits his mark twice, hits his mark 3 times. Now I'm going to pass to him because he's obviously hot.
The basket looks to him that it's the size of a soccer goal.
He's golden. He's got the gods on his side.
And why are we talking about them?
Well, because in this situation, you'd have to agree that Andrew Tooney was hot, right?
Yes.
Hot, that's the word. So let me ask, what exactly do you mean when you say hot?
Why are you asking me? Because he's making a bunch of shots in a row. And if you're on his team and you're coming down the court, you pass the ball to Andrew because he's on a roll.
What the fan assumes is that after 5 shots, he'd be more likely to make his 6th shot.
That to me just seems like common sense. If he's making lots of buckets, of course you're going to pass it to him.
Did the players assume this? Obviously, if they're going to pass.
Oh, right? The players all believe this?
The coaches believe this too?
The coaches believe it, so it actually dictates the plays they call. Everyone assumes it to be true, that the hot hand is a real thing. It dictates the flow of basketball games.
Thank you, Jonah. But?
The hot hand doesn't exist.
What? You just went through this whole rigmarole about the Sixers being hot.
Yeah, well, they were a great team. But a lot of scientists have looked at this question of hotness in sports. And in fact, there's a couple of scientists who actually looked at all the made shots and the missed shots of this 76ers team. And when they looked directly at the numbers, emotions aside, just the data, here's what they found.
At the very moment you think you're hottest, you're actually freezing cold.
Wait, that can't be right.
Some of these percentages are pretty damning.
Take Andrew Toney. During the regular season, Tony made 46% of his shots.
46%.
After hitting 3 shots in a row, which means he's in the zone, he's totally there, his field goal percentage drops to 34%.
That's what I'm saying.
That's what I'm telling you, Jenna Boomrat.
And the reason seems to be is that Andrew knows he's hot, or he thinks he's hot, so he's taking less responsible shots. He's taking, you know, the 3-point jumper from way beyond the arc, and he assumes his streak will somehow save him.
No, it cannot be, because Jonah, you've been to basketball games. You see what happens. Guy makes 3 shots in a row, the crowd gets up, suddenly there's an electricity in the air. Every time the guy gets the ball, everyone stands up in anticipation. You're telling me that's all a figment of our collective imagination?
It is a figment of our collective imagination, and it's especially a figment of the way we kind of calculate streaks. The reason Andrew seems so hot is because he makes 3, misses the 4th, makes the 5th, misses the 6th, makes the 7th and 8th. And so then we rewrite that essentially random process, this mixture of makes and misses, we rewrite it in terms of, oh, it's a streak. Once we think he's hot, we tend to edit what actually happens to kind of preserve that sense of the streak.
Ugh.
Okay, don't believe Jonah. What about Jay Kohler, our statistician from Arizona State?
It shouldn't deviate.
Listen to him.
I have no reason to think, even if whether he missed 7 in a row or made 7 in a row or made 3 of his last 4, I don't really care. I know that he's a machine. He's like a 52% shooting machine or whatever his number is.
No, but he's not a machine though. He's a person with confidence that ebbs and flows.
Yeah,
There's got to be a difference there.
I agree with you. You've just described the psychological theory that makes the hot hand belief so compelling and so hard to get rid of with data. But it just doesn't matter whether the player made 3 or missed 3. Their probability of making that fourth shot, that next one, is pretty much the same.
This is very, very depressing. Essentially what you're saying is that basketball players are like...
Coins.
Coins.
Yes. Yeah.
The fact is, Jed, you are, and Kobe Bryant even, is more like a coin than any of us had dared to imagine.
No.
Kobe has a pattern. In his case, it's what, 50-60-40? On any given night with Kobe, you think, oh, he's spectacular. But all he's doing is he's just having another night of his very 60-40 life. And that's just the way it plays out.
Even on a shot-by-shot basis, you're saying?
Yeah. Each shot seems to be kind of a random event.
Exactly. By the way, are you willing to concede that statistically this is a...
Not yet.
It's so counterintuitive. I still, as a basketball fan, I was just watching a game the other night saying, pass it to Kobe, assholes, because he's clearly hot. The only exception to this whole literature of streakiness is
hockey.
No, is...
The sport no one cares about. Yeah.
Is it Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak where he hits for 42 games in a row? I've got it in the book somewhere.
Actually, Joe DiMaggio's hitting streak was 56 games. 56.
Yes. So Joe DiMaggio is just about the only outlier you can find in professional sports.
He's the only real hero.
Yep.
Well, at least I got Joe.
You know what, Jed? One reason you have trouble, I think.
More than trouble. I'm still
well, it's
don't
because
believe
you, you're not the only person who is a person of pattern and habit. We all are.
Come in.
Pattern rules the brain. Here's another story. This is, again, from Jonah Lehrer, but this one is about a woman. Mm-hmm. I believe her name is Anne.
I'm Anne Consaver. I live in a small country town where most people know other people.
Anne was a high school English teacher.
I taught for 31 years.
She now lives in West Virginia.
Wait, can you wait this minute? There's someone at my door. I'm sorry.
No, of course. Anne was an upstanding citizen, went to church every Sunday, was just one of those people who...
Makes the world go round.
I'm sorry.
Not at all.
Anyway, in 1991, I would go to the grocery store. And on the occasions I wrote a check for my groceries, the woman would say, gosh, you're shaky.
And she says she began to notice that her hands would start to tremble.
Are you all right? But I just thought maybe it was because of working that hard and trying to get everything done.
And it got particularly bad when she said she was just walking in the mall doing some shopping.
And I was by myself walking. And it was like I stepped off a step that wasn't there.
It was the first full body tremor. She fell.
And then my husband was a doctor, and he sent me to a neurologist who diagnosed me with Parkinson's.
Well, how old is she, by the way?
She was at that point in her early 50s.
What is Parkinson's?
Parkinson's is the death of dopamine neurons in the back of your brain, in the part of your brain that controls bodily movement. And so when these neurons die, the end result is first the shaking hand and the loss of feeling and the loss of movement. And then, of course, the tremors get worse and worse.
But anyway.
Well, the doctor diagnosed her with Parkinson's, and he gives her a drug called Requip.
Requip was a new medicine in 1992.
It's a pseudo-dopamine. It basically mimics dopamine in the synapse of the cells.
And it was like a miracle drug for me.
Her tremors disappear, her symptoms disappear.
So she's cured, or?
If you looked at her on Requip, years after she had Parkinson's, you wouldn't notice anything. She would seem symptom-free. So about 7 or 8 years go by, all the while they're upping the dosage to compensate for the cell loss that's still taking place. And in the early years of 2000, something sort of unusual happened to Anne.
Some friends of mine had gone to Las Vegas every year for the basketball tournament, the Final Four type thing. And they asked would I like to go with them. And I said, yes, I would.
So she went to watch basketball, but as often happens in Vegas, one afternoon she and her friends found themselves in a casino. Had you ever gambled before this trip to Las Vegas?
No, I was raised in a household that was fairly religious, and we considered gambling a sin.
But as she stood there in the casino in Vegas, she had this inexplicable urge to go to the slot machines.
They had frogs and princes and cars and cherries and lemon, push a button, wheels spin and see what the pictures did. I've never taken any drugs, so I don't have anything to compare it to, but it was like a high. That was sort of the beginning of it.
And then when she comes back to West Virginia,
I couldn't wait to get to a machine I really wanted to play.
She discovers the dog racing track.
It's a good spot to pull in.
About 15 miles away from her house.
I'd go at 7:30, be there when they open.
And that's where she would go, and they had a wide assortment of slot machines.
Hi, how are you?
If I had the money, I'd play all day.
From 7 to 3:30 in the morning.
Whoa.
And then she would go home and play slots.
On the computer.
On her computer. Not even for money. Just for the sheer visceral thrill.
I would play that the rest of the night. 7:30 the next morning, I'd be back at the joint.
Hi, how are you?
Without any sleep at all?
No sleep, and she could keep that up for several days in a row.
At the beginning of my gambling, I'd wake up in the night and just scream out, oh God, what am I doing? Help me, save me. But eventually I became too hard-hearted, I guess, to even pay attention to that.
Her credit cards are all maxed out.
I sold my mother's silver. I sold my silverware. Things that should have been my son's heirlooms. Stole from the safety deposit box.
She steals quarters from her grandkids.
Steals quarters from her grandkids?
Yeah.
Anything I looked at around the house, I thought I could get money out of.
Everyone who knows her is watching her life fall apart.
My house was filthy, dirty, a mess. I wouldn't take time to even wash dishes.
She lives on peanut butter.
Didn't have any crackers or bread or anything. I just had peanut butter.
Because that's all she can afford and still leave as much money as possible for the slots.
Even when I'd be at church, I'd think, well, so many more minutes or so many more hours I can go gamble.
Her husband eventually leaves her.
I mean, I loved my husband, but
they got divorced.
There's just no decision. Everything is gambling. One of the neat things about gambling is you can do it by yourself.
How much money did you lose during those years, if you don't mind me asking?
I lost at least $300,000.
$300,000.
Which to her is?
Is all her life savings.
And that's one quarter at a time.
Yeah, that's the surreal part.
Dad. Tried several things. I went to a rehab facility. My father, I told you, I was raised in a really religious home. Sometimes I would say my dad's watching me from heaven and he wouldn't approve of this. He wouldn't be so disappointed in me. But seemingly I just couldn't stop.
Let me pause here for a second, Jad. I want to just take a moment to try to figure out what exactly is happening to Anne.
Yeah, why can't she stop?
Yeah. It turns out there may be an explanation if you look into her brain. Remember earlier we talked about a little chemical called dopamine,
yeah,
and how she didn't have enough dopamine in her brain, so that was giving her some kind of movement trouble, the Parkinson's.
Right.
It also turns out to be the case that anytime you do something that makes you feel good, your brain spurts out dopamine.
For years, that's how scientists saw dopamine, as the neurotransmitter of pleasure, the neurotransmitter of sex, drugs, and rock and roll.
But you said earlier that dopamine has to do with movement.
Well, what is the ultimate purpose of movement from the perspective of evolution? It's to get you to food. It's to get you to sex. It's to get you to a reward.
Huh.
So that's why the same circuits, the same chemical that controls motivation, that controls what you want, also controls movement.
But that turned out it was a little more complicated than that. In the mid-1970s,
a guy named Wolfram Schultz
decided to take a much closer look, and his subject was a monkey.
So he would put these very thin needles that can record the activity of individual dopamine neurons in the monkey brain.
And they'd put the monkey in a room, and then every day they would walk down the hall to the room where the monkey was. They'd open the door.
Hello, monkey.
They'd flip on the light. They'd give the monkey some juice.
Here you go, monkey.
And then when the monkey sipped the juice, dopamine.
Happy monkey.
Right. But then comes a surprise.
He soon discovered something very odd about these neurons.
As they juiced this monkey day.
Hello, monkey.
After day.
Hello, monkey.
After day.
Hello, monkey.
After day.
Hello, monkey.
The
Hello.
Squirt of dopamine, which they were always measuring in the monkey's brain, seemed to move forward in time.
What do you mean?
Well, at first, the dopamine hit when the monkey took the sip of juice.
Hello, monkey.
But after a while, the monkey got the dopamine hit when they entered the room and switched on the light.
Hello, monkey.
And then after a few more times, the dopamine hit when the researcher's feet could be heard walking down the hall. You see what's happening here?
Hello, monkey.
Not really? You're going to have to bring it home for
well,
me.
Well, I'll do it again then. What the monkey is trying to do is piece together the sequence of events that inevitably lead to juice.
Exactly. That's what these cells do. They try to predict rewards.
Oh, so this isn't just about movement or about feeling good. It's about finding the pattern of the thing that makes you feel good.
Yeah.
It's pattern finding.
Oh, this is pure pattern recognition. This is essentially how your brain makes sense of reality. In some very primitive sense, it parses reality in terms of rewards. So this is how you get more food in the wild, is you can see the reward before anyone else can.
So we're talking about like basic survival stuff here.
Mm-hmm. There's one other wrinkle, though, about the dopamine system that makes casinos and slot machines so tantalizing, which is that these cells are also programmed to be very sensitive to surprising rewards. So this seems to be, most scientists speculate that this seems to be your brain's way of telling you, pay attention, you just got something for free, this must be good. Sit here in this nice comfy velvet chair and try to figure out this reward.
So now imagine Anne sitting there at the slot machine. She pushes the button on the machine, and oh my God.
And sirens and bells go off, coins clang.
And inside her head, her dopamine neurons, they're saying, this is wonderful! But now, how did this happen?
Where did this big reward come from?
What did you do this time?
Why are you so happy all of a sudden?
And it starts searching for something.
They had frogs and princes.
Was
and
it the number of cherries that she had just before? Was it that this machine had 13 hits and this was the 14th?
I thought I could tell.
It has all kinds of pattern-like things. It has bells. It has lights. But the problem
is that there is no pattern to find.
There is no pattern.
It's inherently random. It's inherently unpredictable.
And while the rest of us might just, you know, give up and walk away.
God, I just wasted $100 on this stupid machine. I should go get lunch.
Anne can't go to lunch. Her dopamine system is
too powerful, too potent.
Oh, because of that drug she's taking.
Right. It keeps surging and surging, forcing her neurons to fight hard to find a pattern. That's what's gripping her. Her brain is intoxicated at the possibility that it will learn how to succeed, that it will
crack an uncrackable code.
I thought I was good at stopping the machines, in fact.
She told me a story about she would go to buy milk and then spend the next 12 hours with the milk rotting next to her as she puts quarter after quarter after quarter into this machine. Were you surprised when you learned that the medication might be responsible for your gambling addiction?
I mean, someone said to me, this medicine will cause compulsive gambling. I would have thought they were crazy.
It's just at that time where the first studies come out showing that this is actually a common side effect of Requip.
Really? So there were other ANDs appearing in other places? Same deal?
Absolutely.
Basically, after Manuel just took me off the Requip,
her compulsion disappeared instantaneously.
Almost immediately.
That fast?
Well, within a week, I'd say.
Wow.
It was gone.
I haven't gambled for nearly 3 years.
Did her Parkinson's return?
Yeah.
I have tremors a lot worse. I've recently gotten a cane. I have trouble walking. I use a walker.
So the price of not being a gambling addict is living with debilitating Parkinsonian symptoms.
But my son, let me finish about my son. When I told him after I quit gambling, I said, son, I sold things that belong to you that you should have. And he said, Mom, those are just things. It's just really great to have you back.
Radiolab will continue in a moment.
Message 2.
This is Ann Kleinsiver. Support for NPR comes from NPR station Ann.
The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age. The John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation.
Committed to building a more just, verdant, and peaceful world. More information at macfound.org. And the Annie E. Casey Foundation, promoting lifelong family connections for children and youth in foster care. On the web at aecf.org.
This is NPR, National Public Radio.